Welcome back, guys. DG, Aslan, KMWX, few minutes past 3 p.m. My buddy Mark Gelman joined us now. What's up, Mark?
Hey, how are you, buddy?
Doing well, man. It's been too long. How have you been?
We're doing great. You know, we're really pleased with our first quarter. It's actually going to be the biggest quarter in the history of our company. We're excited. We still have a weakness in inventory. And so, you know, we're improving our market share. And so right now our sellers are getting significant over askings, multiple offers. Buyers have to have the appetite to participate in this market. So it's a really interesting market. And then with the news. So there's a lot going on right now, my friend.
Yeah, we'll take it one at a time. So the stuff with the commission percentages, I don't understand much about that. And so I'm going to guess there are a lot of people in the audience who heard about it, saw the story on the news and kind of glossed over it. What does it mean for the average person out there?
Sure. So it's interesting. So, and first off, thank you so much for allowing me to be on here. There's a lot of news. There's a lot of headlines about. So just on the most basic, the National Association of Realtors just settled on Friday with major lawsuits regarding commissions. And what happened is the Department of Justice wanted to decouple commissions that sellers pay for listing agents, but they also pay the buyers commission. So DOJ really led on this as uncoupling of the two. So now then the headlines as well, that commissions are going to be slashed, that they're going to drop 50%. So a lot of information, a lot of misinformation. The one thing I can tell you is what it's going to do and how it's going to impact. I don't believe it's going to ultimately impact sellers at all. I believe sellers are going to get their prices. I believe in this weak inventory, they're still going to get over asking multiple offers. I don't see those prices going down at all. I actually see it somewhat challenging for buyers because now buyers are going to be responsible for a portion of that commission, or the sellers will have concessions that will go to the buyers. But it's really a complex that, in my opinion, puts a disadvantage to buyers, which is actually contrarian to what they wanted it to accomplish. So it's actually a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I think that too many people saw that and they're like, oh, these guys have been taking advantage of us. It's going to go from 6 to 3. This is good news.
And the thing about it is just, For reference purposes, number one, it's really not even a 50-50 split. Traditionally, there you pay more to the listing agent than you do to the buyer agent. There will be. There's no doubt about it, Dave. There's a words of like, hey, half of our industry is going to leave. There are going to be some big numbers. This could be, if there's 1 million agents, it could be 200,000, 100. But here's the thing, Dave. You are a lawyer. Not great lawyers that didn't show value got paid. The best of the best get paid. Yeah. You can represent yourself in the court of law, but why wouldn't I hire a lawyer? You can represent, I can do my own taxes. I was a CPA. I'm an accountant. I pay thousands of dollars for my taxes to be done and done right. So here's the thing. It's the biggest financial decision people are going to make. Great agents, they're going to be in business. Order takers, it will be challenging for them. No doubt about it.
So Matt Lamb, one of your guys who has helped me out a couple of times, just one of the very best agents in town. I was texting with him like, hey, I'm intrigued. Tell me about this market. And he was saying the same as you, that there just is a continuing low inventory, which just, you don't have to be a real estate agent to do the math. Supply and demand makes everyone's house out there a little more special if you strike while the iron's hot.
You know, we absolutely, look, if somebody has an interest in moving, there is absolutely no reason to take advantage of that. Now, I don't want to scare people and say, look, in the next month, if you don't list your house in the next month, 2 months, there's going to be a flood of homes and prices are going to drop. I just do not see a significant bump up in inventory. There's nothing to lead me to believe that it's going to be different than last year from an inventory component. The problem is there's so many sellers that are in 2%, 3% interest rates that they don't want to trade up in interest rates. Yeah. And while, you know, and there's this other thing that buyers are, quote, going to wait till interest rates go down. That is really a flawed philosophy, because how many people are waiting for those interest rates? a lot of buyers, and you're just going to have more competition. Sellers aren't going to get motivated to trade up interest rates by a 1% decrease in rates, so you're just going to have more competition. We believe prices are going to go up. So it really, it's an interesting dynamic right now. A lot of moving parts, my friend.
And you guys are very consultative in that if someone says, hey, look, I'm interested in buying, I'm interested in selling, whatever it is, it's not just as simple like, great, we're going to stick a sign in your yard and we'll tell you when someone's interested. You're going to be able to tell them, like, it's in your interest to buy down the loan. It's in your interest to not buy down the loan. It's in your interest to do this. It's in your interest to do that. I just want, having used you guys multiple times, I just want to impress upon people, very hands-on, very collaborative.
And I appreciate that. Here's the thing. It's a really interesting dynamic because certainly people could sell their home for sale by owner. No doubt about it. But at the end of the day, we're not seeing a bump up in one of the weakest inventory markets. And the reason is sellers still are taking advantage of having a great agent. Again, I'll reinforce, and I appreciate the kind words, trusted advisors who add significant value to the transaction. I mean, there are so many roadblocks that happen, whether they're inspections, whether they're survey, title issues, that they can protect your largest investment. And I really appreciate your support and kind words. It's just an interesting time. Inventory, interest rates, the NAR settlement, a lot of moving parts, but hey, it's part of life, buddy.
That's right. If you guys, and again, these guys are my clients, but they're also my really good friends, and I have used them several times. Totally happy with them. If you are thinking about a real estate transaction at all in the calendar year 2024, reach out to them at thegelmanteam.com. Thank you, buddy. Say hey to everybody for me.
You got it. Have a great day. Thanks for having me as always.
You too, pal.
Bye-bye now.
I was driving behind a car today, a bumper sticker car, and it had one of those coexist stickers on it. And I've always thought, they've always been some of my favorite dork bumper stickers. Like, wouldn't it be nice? You know, and it has all the different signs for all the different religions. Would you say that truly coexisting in 2024 is absolutely realistic? We just need to get our ducks in a row. Somewhat optimistic, probably not going to happen, or just give it up to truly coexist, to really get along with one another, politically, religiously, as humans.
Has there ever been a time in human history where that happened?
That's kind of my thing, too. I mean, I would love for that
we
not
don't
to be
seem
the case.
To like to coexist, do we?
Well, because some of us are wired to be competitive. And I mean, we're all competitive, but it's different. People are slightly different in how competitive they are. Like, I'm super competitive, but I don't want to win at the expense of someone else. Other people don't care about someone else. They just couldn't. I don't care if I have to step on someone's back. Doesn't matter. I get what I want.
Yeah.
And we're all a little different in that way. And by the way, I do think that aggression and all that is why the species flourished.
Yeah. That's a good point.
I mean, it's one of the reasons why we are what we are is because
that's why the Neanderthals are on the ground.
We're smart and we're mean. I mean, you know, you combine that with opposable thumbs and the ability to do basically every physical task that a mammal could be asked to do, we're in pretty good shape. So, no, I don't think we ever get to coexist. It would be nice, though, because some places do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but they're all in places that are much smaller,
true,
right? Like all of the happiest countries,
truly
when we talked about that
interests.
The other day, it's all Finland, Sweden. Well, they're small places.
Yeah. Do you guys understand much about this iPhone deal with the DOJ? Does it hit you like, oh, damn you, Apple, or you know?
Everything hits me that way.
Yeah, I kind of glossed over. I was like, I still get my phone, right?
Antitrust stuff is like, I don't know, that always strikes me as like white collar, you know what I mean? In a way that doesn't generally affect me. What do you think, Kev?
It's not something that fires people up. It's not something that makes them emotional.
Yeah, that's a better way of putting
it. It probably impacts more people than regular crime.
Yeah,
things,
that's true.
Like things like that, because it's going to cause, the reason they're doing it, or what if they're guilty of doing what they're accused of, the reason companies engage in behaviors is because it makes them money.
Yeah.
Well, where are they getting the money? They're getting it from us. So in a way, I mean, I despise it. I dislike when we have any like weird business practices, but I think we're just so sick of it and so used to it that you just blow past it.
321 DGS on KMOX. We have Dave Murray coming up at the bottom of the hour, and our buddy Jimmy Griffin's going to be here at the top of the hour. Stairway to Kevin.
You want to get back into some of the stuff we did yesterday?
Yeah,
something
sure.
Similar to that. Remember the physicist, Eric Weinstein? So yesterday was basically he was talking about the idea of managed reality. And not that everything is rigged, not that it's a simulation or anything, like just that, you know, you're in a position where, you know, nobody talks about the truth. Like they'd rather just talk and then move on to the next thing and talk and then move on to the next thing rather than addressing problems and fixing them. Well, the next part of this same conversation, it was with a podcaster named Chris Williamson. And they're talking a bit about the kind of lies that we have to tell every day, right? This part of the conversation was a lot about about honesty, what's okay to be honest about and what's not. And they kind of touch on that part in this clip.
I try to tell people why the truth can't work. I mean, people are always confused by this. I say, okay, tell me I have mildly bad breath. You have mildly bad breath. And I say, well, you just told me that my breath is so horrendous that you were willing to cross a social chasm that essentially no one ever crosses. So obviously my breath must be as bad as a sewer. And then they say, would you like a stick of gum? And I say, sure. And I'd show no cognition that you've actually told me about. You know, you can't transmit that piece of information. On the other hand, there are ways of getting at these questions through language. For example, you're not allowed to say that you like cleavage, but you are allowed to say that was an incredibly dramatic neckline. Why is it that one phrase is penalized? The key question is how you are allowed to discuss the truth as well as whether you are allowed to discuss the truth.
I thought that was another fascinating part. The whole, because we talk about this all the time, right? On radio, we have the seven words you cannot say. But I can say another variation of that same word, and it means the same thing, and it conjures the same image in your head. Mm-hmm. That one's okay. And again, it's just, this one to me today, yesterday was more about it, like, ooh, that's kind of profound. To me, it's just, why are we so weird? Why are human beings such strange animals where putting it one way is totally fine, and putting it another way is offensive and unacceptable and might even get you in trouble?
Yeah, we love making rules. We love breaking rules. But we love making them.
And we love unwritten rules.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what he's talking about there, too, like the social norms. It's considered a great offense to go up to someone and say, man, your breath stinks. But it's okay if you're like, instead of saying that, do you want a piece of gum? Do you want a mint? Whatever. And obviously we know these things. There's a sliding scale. The better you know someone, the more you can say a thing. The less you know them, the less you can. But it's always been a fascinating thing to me as to, you know, outside of familiarity, just general human interactions in public with people you don't know or don't know very well. Why is it why do we have to be so detailed about it? And doesn't the manner in which you deliver the message matter more than the words you choose, right? If I come up to somebody and I'm like, hey, listen, man, I'm sorry, but you know, this versus, man, your breath stinks. You know, like there are, it's a lot of it is in delivery and tone and all of that. Why do we fixate on the words, the specific words?
So as you're talking, what I'm thinking about is here's the way it works, at least in my life. That there are things that you can say and things you can't on the radio. There are things you can say and things you can't in mixed company among people who you don't know very well.
Right.
And then there's what you can say to your partner, significant other, best friend. And those things are so different that you can, I have people around me who I feel like I can trust enough that I can speak in any way I want, in any way that might be flagged or frowned upon by mixed company or certainly on the radio. But I think that everyone does that. I don't think that's a Dave thing. I think everyone has those people. And you're like, well, which one's real? Well,
yeah. No, I think that one, that's true. And by the way, necessary. That's what I mean when I'm talking about the familiarity. The more you know someone, the more you understand exactly what's okay. The interesting thing aside from that is even if a topic is acceptable to discuss, you can only use certain words in the public setting.
Yeah.
Right. So you could take on that topic of bad breath. You could take on certain things and that's not forbidden. It's not weird. It's not, you know, ooh, better wonder who's around, but you can't say things with a certain set of words.
I hope we get to a point in the future because I think in my life, I grew up getting yelled at by everyone, by my parents, by my teachers, by my coaches, by my bosses. It was just a really extremely yelly time, like unnecessarily so.
Yeah.
Like, you can communicate to me that I'm not putting enough glaze on the long john. That sounded bad. without screaming at me and questioning my core intelligence. And now it seems the opposite. Like, if you're really screwing up your job, I need to approach you in a very friendly manner.
I know.
And make sure that you're not in any way triggered and let you know that I'm a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit disappointed. And I just hope that in the coming years we can find maybe an equilibrium.
I was going to say the middle ground is probably the most effective of those.
You think so?
Right? Because some people, if you're just yelling all the time, they're going to tune you out. You're not going to help. And other people, if you're just nice all the time, they're just not going to get the message.
No. 334 DGS, sun coming out. Maybe it's warming up out there a little bit. Dave Murray joins us. Hello, Dave.
Guy, it's kind of chilly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's chilly compared to yesterday, but that's the thing we're on. We're up and down, up and down.
Tomorrow's an up day, right?
Tomorrow is an up day by far. A good almost 15 degrees warmer Friday afternoon.
Nice. Very nice.
69 will do it.
How is the outlook for yard work over the weekend?
You can get it done. I still would not rush. I mean, you could start to do some cleanup. I wouldn't plant anything yet. It's just not worth it. And plus, we have a lot of rain on the way, but not over the weekend. Gusty winds Friday night, 35. There's a cold front coming through, so they're from the northwest. So Saturday's back to chilly, 52 degrees, lots of sunshine, but it's a windy day. If you're going to be outside, you get caught in the wind. It will definitely be chilly, 52. Lots of clouds Saturday night, 35. Sunday, partly to mostly cloudy, 62, so a little bit better. And then a slow-moving low-pressure system comes out of the southwest. Cold air is going to stay to our north, so this is a warm system, but it looks like a cutter. It's going to move to our west. That sets us up for rain and thunderstorms, kind of a slow-moving system late Sunday night, Monday night, and into Tuesday morning. The odds are favoring a pretty good soaking rain at this point. Once that low comes by, it will pull down some colder air. Nothing extreme, nothing weird, but a little bit below average Tuesday night, Wednesday night. And that will drive overnight lows back into the 20s, upper 20s for the most part, and 40s to low 50s for high temperatures for a couple of days. You're going to hear about the Great Lakes in the Northeast getting snuckled by a snowstorm and really cold air coming in. That's all part of our system, but that's where the cold air is, and that's what's going to trigger it. There are also signs that a storm could come out of the Gulf of Mexico and go right up the East Coast. So probably a lot of travel concerns for the East Coast and especially the Northeast over the next couple of days, but not really for us.
Dave, I bet you're jealous that we're going to have our second solar eclipse within 7 years coming up in a week or so.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a couple of weeks, isn't it?
April 8th.
Okay. Yeah, it's a couple of weeks in my book.
So I'm understanding, not to put you on the spot because you're not an astronomer, but I'm understanding that not just with the darkness, but there's going to be, like, you'd see Venus and different things. It's supposed to be a kind of a special eclipse.
Yes, if you're in the path of totality, which is all, we are not in the immediate St. Louis area, but we're close. A couple of weird things are going to happen. First, enjoy the eclipse. Because it is a special event. We've had one in St. Louis a few years ago. And there's a number of things that are going to happen. One, temperature is going to drop. Temperatures could drop 5-6 degrees in a very short period of time because it's like night. Also, listen for the night birds and night insects because they'll come out and they'll start chirping and doing their thing. Stars will come out. Venus is extremely bright. That's in the morning now, but Jupiter will be up there. You might be able to pick out Jupiter because it will get dark, and it happens really quickly. It's one of these things where you're going, well, we're really close to totality, and I'm not impressed, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, what just happened? It's just that quick. And it doesn't last very long, but it's very cool and very exciting.
Yeah, the other night when you told us to look at the moon and Jupiter was there, that was super cool. That was really neat.
Yeah, and you found them both.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did.
That's good.
I'm a big boy.
What did you find first? Did you find Jupiter first and then say the moon's got to be around? Oh, there's the moon.
I no longer trust the moon. So even when I find it, I'm like, it could be you.
I was just confused that Jupiter's supposed to be so big, but it was so small next to the moon.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. Don't go down this road.
Did you... You did some hell. So Rachel's out today, Dave. She's sick. And Andrew, you did some headlines.
Oh, no. Rachel, feel better.
I did some headlines. I did some. Do you want some?
No, I just, okay. Just wanted to find
just
out.
Just ask for it. I just wanted to know if you did them.
Yeah, just make sure they're there.
So applications for unemployment benefits have dipped pretty severely, it looks like. Strong job market. Latest report from the Labor Department. The number dropped by 2,000 to 210,000 for the week ending March 16th. The four-week average of claims rose to 211,000. So 1.8 million overall were collecting benefits for the week, which is down quite a bit. Seems like a good thing. Yeah. I don't know. This is one of those things, we've talked about this before in like common sense terms, where it's like you hear that the job market is strong, but then every restaurant you go in says, oh, no, but we can't
have anybody to work.
All this stuff. So it's like, all right, which is it? Is it that everyone's employed, or is it that no one wants to work? Like, it just gets a little confusing.
Politically, too. And this is mostly Trump, but it's the other side as well. I really, if I had my way, I wish they would stop with the rhetoric, because the rhetoric in the 80s and the 90s, we all kind of knew better. We knew it wasn't the last election. We knew that it wasn't the end of democracy. So we took it with a grain of salt. We moved on about our lives. Now, after all the craziness and COVID and January 6th and the whole thing, when someone says this is the last election unless I'm the guy, or this is the end of democracy if you elect this guy, I think that's especially careless and un-American. You can make your case. You can take your shots against the other guy. He's old. He's stupid. He's a criminal. He's this. He's that. Whatever. Whatever side you're on or whoever you're running against. But I just wish that we would stop using this inflammatory language because it's too close to the truth. First of all, we came way too close in a number of ways. And secondly, I don't think we've ever had more kooks out there who will take something that someone says from either side and act on it. Thoughts?
Agreed. And we also need to, and it's never going to happen because it doesn't work, but nobody puts anything into any context.
True.
Right? You'll hear, well, the economy is the worst ever, but the stock market's really high and my 401k is doing well. Or when that's not doing well and other people are getting jobs, okay, well, that's bad too. I heard on Ronge and Amy today, they had a guy who studies crime statistics and looking at the crime rate in a big city. And he said, listen, most of the crime happens on like 4% of the blocks that exist in that city.
Yeah.
So if you were to fix those blocks, you're fixing crime numbers.
Yep.
And the way that people report them is all distorted. By the way that police departments report them and mayors report them can be distorted because they change categories all the time. And we're always trying to take the one thing that sounds good from the side that we're trying to represent. And we play that up and play the other one down, but we don't provide the context. What does that mean? You know, when people are saying crime's out of hand, well, FBI stats say that crime is the lowest it's been in a long time. And when you look at it any one year, it's going to go up and down. If you're looking at it over a 30-year span, it's been nothing but down basically since 9/11.
Or the big ones, like if I'm not elected, this will be the last election.
Right, like that.
How? How? How would that tell me the mechanism? Or if this guy's elected, it's the end of democracy. Tell me how that works. Literally, go step by step. You're not going to hear it.
Yeah.
No context ever.
That's the thing that drives me nuts. And you hear it in congressional hearings where they're just going to tell a story. See, we were told you that was happening. Well, you didn't show me the work. We need to have like a third grade math. Show me your work on the paper attitude for this stuff.
Andrew,
well, I like
to you.
That. Yeah.
Another political one, at least in my opinion. Biden cancels another $6 billion in federal student debt.
But has he canceled a single dollar yet, really?
That is a great question. So let's see here. So for thousands of public service workers, so that's the big one this time, 78,000 eligible public service workers, including teachers, nurses, and firefighters, He said, from day one of my administration, I promised to fix broken student loan programs and make sure higher education is a ticket to the middle class, not a barrier to opportunity.
Here's the thing. Anyone can say it. I could say it. I thought the last time that he did the big one, the pushback was, no, you can't do it. It's unconstitutional.
Right. So
and they kind of backed off.
They went a different route. So it's all about the mechanism by which you do it.
So the people really are having their debts forgiven.
Sounds like it. It sounds like it. And then the other part of this, too, is like when you think of something like this, we're just going to cancel the debt, but we're not going to fix the problem.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to say, you people that had this problem 10 years ago, you're off the hook. But these same loans are putting out now for kids that are in college now.
Well, you know what? Phoebe, I'm, you know, paying for Phoebe's school. Very fortunate that I can do that. But I almost feel stupid. It's like maybe you should take out some loans because you
and then just not pay them.
And just not pay them. You might get them.
Well, I mean, that's forgiven. What the wealthy class does.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about the speaking of mechanisms, how do you guys feel about the fact that it's only eligible to certain? They just picked like
you're picking winners and losers.
They're picking winners and losers out of a pool that includes like public service workers. How do you guys feel about that?
Which is the argument? I think one of the great arguments against it.
Yeah.
Is that you're just kind of picking, like you said, picking winners and losers. Mm. And none of this stuff should be able to be done by one person waving a pen.
Agreed.
Yeah.
All of these things are supposed to be legislated because then the problem is, let's say Joe Biden loses and Donald Trump takes office and he says, you know what? By executive order, because I have that power, I am undoing this thing. So that's no longer a thing anymore.
Also, as we've said several times, and this surprised me when I learned this a few months ago, that the biggest asset the United States of America has is the student loans. And so it's you're not just forgiving people. You're not just helping individuals who owe 25 grand and now they don't owe any or they owe five. You are giving up assets of the United States of America. Congress controls the purse strings. So that typically means the spending, but I think it should also have a great deal to say in the assets.
Yep.
It's the flow chart. Every person, every family, every business has a budget, have, you know, a ledger with, you know, in and out, off and on. And I don't like it when any single human hand with the stroke of a pen can give up literally billions of dollars in assets of the country.
And what they're doing with the student loan thing is the equivalent of having a flat tire, filling it up with air. Oh, problem's fixed. Except that the next day it's going to be flat again. And then you got to fix it again instead of going and get a new tire.
Yeah.
Like, they need to fix the student loan system. If it's a predatory system taking advantage of people, then you need to fix it. And not just give someone else an air pump to fill up their tire.
Yeah.
Next story here. Trump's legal costs have outstripped the money that he has raised.
I saw that.
In the past month. So he, the Save America Leadership Political Action Committee spent nearly $5.6 million on legal bills. And they only earned about $5 million from fundraisers and stuff. And that's really interesting to me.
I admit that I don't have a deep understanding of this, but I just think that's so dirty. It's clearly legal.
Yeah.
Because they talk about it very openly. And if Trump does it, then other people have done it. He's not alone in this. I never begrudge Trump doing what's legal. If he files his taxes and he pays zero taxes, well, then he can get audited. And if he owes money, he can pay it. And if not, then fine. But, yeah, I just don't like that either. I don't like people giving their hard-earned money and it goes to pay someone's legal fees.
I also think it's very interesting that if this continues, if his donors don't continue to show out and the fundraising starts to dry up a little bit or people move away from it or just get tired of giving him money, I think it's really interesting that his campaign could be sunk or seriously damaged by these legal bills,
for
by
sure.
these felonies.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
All righty.
Top of the hour, we have our pal Jimmy Griffin coming up. He has a Tom Petty show, and then tickets go on sale tomorrow for the outdoor El Monstero. Wheels, let's take 3 or 4 minutes and let's sum up the Shohei Ohtani deal again.
Yeah, for anybody that missed it, so it broke yesterday that Shohei Ohtani's name has been connected to an investigation into an illegal bookmaker in Southern California. So sports gambling is not legal in California. So if you're making bets there, you're making bets with illegal bookies. So that's kind of the genesis of it, right? His name came up in an FBI investigation of a bookmaker. He wasn't being investigated, but they found transfers of money in his name to the bookie. And
you know those FBI agents had to crap their pants.
I'm sure. I'm sure. You're like, oh, boy. And then they started to do some investigating. Well, in the process of all of this, the word's starting to come out. So Shohei Ohtani's representative, a PR person, put ESPN in touch with his translator. And the translator told ESPN, look, I got myself into $4.5 million of gambling debt. I've been betting on soccer. I've been betting on football, never baseball, but I've been betting. I've been losing. And I asked him to bail me out, to help me out, and he agreed. So that's why he paid the money to this bookmaker in California.
So the story never was that he was using Shohei Ohtani's money to bet.
Right.
It was he was using his own money. And he was losing it.
Well, he was not using any money. Right? You're betting on credit, which is the problem.
Okay.
Which is the big problem with the illegal bookmaking.
Gotcha.
Is they'll let you run up whatever.
Just like the movies.
Right. Mm. Exactly. They're happy with you continuing to lose because you owe them more. So that was what Ohtani was bailing him out of. And at least according to this, this is the story directly from the translator. Keep in mind, Ohtani and the translator are essentially, they're described as like brothers, like they're best friends. They're always together. They talk all the time. They're inseparable because Ohtani's English is okay, but it's not great. So he has the translator around him all the time. And that translator is paid by the team that Ohtani plays for. So it was the
pot. And paid well.
Right. Wow. $300,000 to $500,000 a year. Yeah. So a lot of money. So that's the story that the translator told ESPN. And then the very next day, Shohei Ohtani's lawyer said, nope, that's not what happened. This guy stole Ohtani's money. He stole $4.5 million from Shohei Ohtani. And that would
mean... Very different stories.
Very different stories. And very different for what it means for Ohtani.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know that he would be punished by Major League Baseball for giving the money to a bookie on behalf of a friend. But he could be because you're not allowed to have any interaction at all with illegal bookmakers if you're an athlete.
Top of the hour, we have our pal Jimmy Griffin coming up. He has a Tom Petty show, and then tickets go on sale tomorrow for the outdoor El Monstero. Wheels, let's take 3 or 4 minutes and let's sum up the Shohei Ohtani deal again.
Yeah, for anybody that missed it, so it broke yesterday that Shohei Ohtani's name has been connected to an investigation into an illegal bookmaker in Southern California. So sports gambling is not legal in California. So if you're making bets there, you're making bets with illegal bookies. So that's kind of the genesis of it, right? His name came up in an FBI investigation of a bookmaker. He wasn't being investigated, but they found transfers of money in his name to the bookie. And
you know those FBI agents had to crap their pants.
I'm sure. You're like, oh, boy. And then they started to do some investigating. Well, in the process of all of this, the word's starting to come out. So Shohei Ohtani's representative, a PR person, put ESPN in touch with his translator. And the translator told ESPN, look, I got myself into $4.5 million of gambling debt. I've been betting on soccer. I've been betting on football, never baseball, but I've been betting. I've been losing. And I asked him to bail me out, to help me out, and he agreed. So that's why he paid the money to this bookmaker in California.
So the story never was that he was using Shohei Ohtani's money to bet.
Right.
He was using his own money. And he was losing it.
Well, he was not using any money. Right? You're betting on credit, which is the problem.
Okay.
Which is the big problem with the illegal bookmaking.
Gotcha.
Is they'll let you run up whatever.
Just like the movies.
Right. Mm. Exactly. They're happy with you continuing to lose because you owe them more. So that was what Ohtani was bailing him out of. And at least according to this is the story directly from the translator. Keep in mind, Ohtani and the translator are essentially, they're described as like brothers, like they're best friends. They're always together. They talk all the time. They're inseparable because Ohtani's English is okay, but it's not great. So he has the translator around him all the time. And that translator is paid by the team that Ohtani plays for. So it was the pot.
And paid well.
Right. Wow. $300,000 to $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
So a lot of money. So that's the story that the translator told ESPN. And then the very next day, Shohei Ohtani's lawyer said, nope, that's not what happened. This guy stole Ohtani's money. He stole $4.5 million from Shohei Ohtani. And that would
very different stories.
Very different stories. And very different for what it means for Ohtani.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know that he would be punished by Major League Baseball for giving the money to a bookie on behalf of a friend, but he could be, because you're not allowed to have any interaction at all with illegal bookmakers if you're an athlete.